The first person in the Bible that it ever says God put his spirit upon was a craftsman in the building of the tabernacle. So it seemed like God cared about artisans and carpenters and all those things. So
this is the Babel Undone podcast. It's a podcast for curious people that want to get a deeper understanding about our complex world. And I'm one of the hosts. My name is Johnny Moore. I'm president of JDA Worldwide and the Congress of Christian Leaders. And I am joined by
Joseph D'Souza, the Archbishop of the Good Shepherd Church of India, an Indian based in India and doing ministry all over the world.
Bishop, today we're going to talk about
very interesting and dear subject of mine, how to make your business or your profession a ministry vehicle.
You know, both Bishop and I have spoken with many, many leaders who feel conflicted about diving into the world of business or their profession while also pursuing full-time ministry. Do they have to pick and choose? You have to pick. You know, are you in full-time ministry or are you a business person? I felt this in my own professional life. You know, they have skills and passion for entrepreneurial endeavors, but wonder if it's right for them as a follower of Christ. Well, today we're going to break that paradigm and talk about how one's profession can be a ministry in and of itself. And actually, throughout Scripture, we see examples of people using their secular opportunities to impact business. I mean, let's not forget that Paul was a tent maker, and Lydia, the first convert to Christianity in all of Europe, was a wealthy merchant. Both of them used these occupations as a platform for good. And we get to speak with someone today who's dedicated his entire professional life to helping people find meaning in their professions.
Our guest, Mike Sherrill, is the CEO of C12 Business Forums, the world's largest peer learning organization for Christian CEOs, business owners, and executives. Mike's professional journey has been a blend of business and ministry, having led entrepreneurial ventures, including a financial services startup and a subsidiary startup of Walgreens. He has served as an associate pastor at Grace Point Church in San Antonio, Texas, as well. Mike launched TQ Strategies, serving as CEO for the management consulting business that offered fractional leadership and strategy work to companies in the enterprise healthcare sector. Mike is a founding board member for the South Texas Alliance for Orphans, has founded and advised numerous other non-governmental organizations, and serves actively in his local church, Community Bible Church in Texas.
Mike, I know you quite well. I know about C12. A lot of our audience may actually have participated in C12 groups or know C12, but plenty of people listening to us all around the world don't know you as I know you. And so I always like to begin these conversations with a very, very simple question. You can answer it however you want. And here's the question. Who is Mike? Who is Mike Sherrill?
Depends on who you ask. My girls will probably give you the best explanation. I'm someone who grew up in Alaska, who 34 years ago encountered Jesus Christ and exchanged my life for his, and that really changed everything about the trajectory of my life. 22 years ago, I convinced this Iowan farm girl to marry me, Jackie. That was one of the smartest moves I made. 18 years ago, she convinced me to move to Texas to be near some family of hers. So I've been living as an immigrant in Texas. If anybody knows Texan culture, I'm an immigrant living there. I'm a girl dad to two phenomenal young ladies who are 14 and 11 and are just a delight. And the last 8 years, I've gotten to serve as the CEO of C12. And I also get involved in some just phenomenal kingdom conspiracy projects. It's like I get to be chairman of Close the Bible Gap, a big global endeavor around Bible distribution, Bible access. And I like to be about my life statement would say I exist to be a catalyst for people to live their destiny while trying to build platforms that advance the gospel in a sustainable way. And so that's That's some of the weirdness of my kid. And my kids would say, and their dad's kind of goofy.
And to move from Alaska to Texas, I mean, that's a big that's a big difference from and not just in Texas. You're in San Antonio, so you go from the frigid north to the boiling south. So.
Yeah, northern Hades or northern Mexico, depending on how you describe it.
Mike, I love the statement that you just made. And reading your bio and all, I mean, I followed C12. But now, in preparing for the process of interview, etc., so much of what is said about you is where so much of the global majority church is. People used to call global South, I call it the majority church, majority world church. Mm-hmm. Global South mm-hmm. is a pejorative word. I don't like to use it because, mm-hmm. Again, it's got the North side divide and who rules and who is been ruled, the colonial.
By the way, he's never told me that before, and so this is a total mm-hmm. setup because I've used that phrase plenty of times. So now I know what he thinks of me.
Yeah.
And I've just sent a piece to the National Association of Evangelicals saying, please don't use the word.
Note taken, Bishop.
Yeah,
note taken.
You've seen that piece. Anyway, but Mike, the thing is, your vision about professionals and entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and taking our profession into wherever God takes us is actually the way, and most people don't understand this, when they read the Acts of the Apostles or whatever, they think that the only way, the main way the church advanced was through Paul and Barnabas and the preachers and the missionaries and all the apostles. That was one way, but that was not the main way that the church impacted the whole world. The main way the church impacted the whole world were ordinary church members taking their profession and being in the world, and then in their profession being a witness, Christian witness there. That mm-hmm. concept has been lost out in the modern missionary movement. So even when I worked with a group, business as mission or whatever, again there, the underlying thinking was, hey, we go there as a tent maker, but business in itself is not legitimate. Profession in itself is not a mission. That, of course, we are countering and saying, please stop, this doesn't work in our world. We don't have the finances to change India or change the majority world with support from local people. We have to tell people, whatever your profession is, be bivocational, work, there's nothing wrong in it. And the grand scheme of the kingdom, you have to be a professional. And isn't that what you try to do as a C12 person, make sure viable businesses and others flourish across the world, or am I missing it?
No, man. Careful what you start, Bishop. You're like pushing all my buttons. I was a follower of Jesus for 15 years before I actually ever realized, you know what? Jesus did a lot of his teaching outside of Sunday and outside of synagogue settings. So these people were working. These were marketplace environments, and most of his miracles and the followers were people who left business or were in business or took this into business. So we're serious about this idea that the first commission in Genesis was go be fruitful, multiply, subdue the earth, harness the creative potential of it, and continue the work that God began in creation. And that never had like a finish point. It never said, God never came back and said, okay, done, stop that. Now just pray and wait for me. He added into that and the Great Commission and the Great Commandments. And I think one of the great challenges of the church, but also the great potentials for the church that excites me, is 99% of the church, the global church, do not work in an ecclesiastic environment. They're masons and plumbers and technologists and doctors and nurses and teachers. And they live in sometimes suspended animation if they think their only contribution to the mission of God is to donate some money versus to be an ambassador of the kingdom every day in what they do, and to know that God cares about how business is done, why it's done, and the impact it has in the world. So I think there's this, like, I feel like there's kindling laid around the world, because my revelation that got me excited about the work I do now, I was a customer of our program 14 years ago. And I was sitting in a meeting one day where it suddenly clicked on me. Most of the business people I was with in that meeting were elders in their churches, were, you know, tithing, giving, serving, but they were trying to figure out how to get more people to show up at their church in the city. And I was in a city that was 90%+ unchurched. And I went, you know, Jesus didn't say go therefore invite everybody to church. He said go therefore make disciples. What if we don't need to figure out how to get the whole city to show up in a church on a Sunday? We need to get the whole church to show up in the city on Monday, and that will change society. And I suddenly went, oh, God's got his people and resources everywhere. We just need to, like, turn them on. We need to, like, activate this. So Bishop, that's the holy discontent I'm chasing.
Yeah, and Johnny knows that I write and I speak about this. We lead a very, very large, one of the largest movements in India, the Good Shepherd. And we have taken that whole movement and turned it around from what it used to be, the older model, to what we call a gospel of the kingdom model, where everyone is called to be a witness of the kingdom. And so in our preaching, teaching, we do speak and hit out at some of the holy cows that the modern missionary movement has given birth to. And really, I don't like some of the... There was good on that side, but there was also the downside on that. And because I work so much among the non-Christians in the world, in India, majority of my friends are non-Christians. They're in all kinds of... They're educators, they're politicians... I'm embarrassed, in one sense, to see we imported whole-scale Western Christianity and its model, mm-hmm. and we were not able to impact the nation as salt and light, mm-hmm. and be, as you said, the church among the people. Everything is about bring people here rather than we are there. So that's a project that's very critical as we go into whatever century this is, where the majority world leads the impetus.
So I
are you a
yeah, go ahead. I so resonate with everything that you guys are both saying. I mean, even in my own case, you know, I became a business person. So I was like in full-time ministry and then I became a business person. And then someone's like, Johnny left the ministry. I didn't leave the ministry. It's like my ministry went with me. And like most of my impact in the world has been in that phase of my life, you know, not in the previous phase. But it also begs a question, Mike, which you're a world expert on. Okay. How do you do this right? Okay, so if you're a CEO or you're just like doing your 9-to-5 in whatever sector of the economy you're in, but you take your faith seriously, how do you get it? And I know you spent a lot of time teaching this, and C12 has, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the powerful things about C12 is this amazing, amazing content that you guys produce, volumes and volumes and volumes of it. But give us a Cliff Notes version. Like if you're a person mm-hmm. of faith in whatever job you're in, whether you're a manager, an executive, or, you know, at an entry level, how do you integrate the two right?
So you used a great word, integration. I think the last few decades we've been really a fan of the people like to talk about life balance and balancing different pieces. And that's got its place, but I think that's not the right word. I think integration is a better word, because what I found myself, similarly, Johnny, when I went to work in business, I remember getting a letter from a little lady at the church I'd grown up in saying, oh, Mike, I'm so sad you had such a heart for Jesus, and I heard you went to work in business. Like, what happened? I thought you loved Jesus. And I was like, I still do. I'm crazy in love with Jesus. I'm trying to follow him every moment. And it actually haunted me. I was like, what's going on here? And I realized that I had this dualism of like separating my identity from my vocation, where somehow the logo on my shirt was defining who I am, rather than my identity transforming any vocation I went into. And then when I began to wrestle with that, that sent me on a quest. So one of the key things we would say now is rather than, you know, Bishop, you mentioned business for mission, business as mission. Sometimes there's this idea of, hey, let's go use almost like a pretend business as a cover to do mission work.
Yeah.
And there's places where I appreciate that, particularly in like oppressed Muslim environments. Sometimes you need some clandestine things. But I think what it runs the risk of is of missing the fuller picture. And so we like to say business as a ministry. And our idea for that simple language is to say, I believe God cares about what we do. Hmm. So if you do accounting, engineering, construction, serving food, he cares about what we do. He cares about how we do it, the way we do it, the values, the kingdom ideals that we represent in that. He cares about our motives. Are we chasing it out of greed, security, idolatry? There's so much heart stuff that we can bring in, even to ministry, same instrument in business. So he cares about what we do, why we do it, how we do it, the way we go about it. There should be a different way that Jesus people do business. He cares about who we are becoming and the impact we have through the business. And so I think it's this integration to go, like what I've come to realize when I first started, when I spent my first couple of years in business, one day someone challenged me. I don't remember who first said, but he said, hey, we tend to judge our spirituality by how we are on Sunday or Wednesday or in our interior life. They said, I think your actual spiritual maturity is how you live on Thursday afternoon when you're in the middle of lawyer meetings and IT projects and customer issues, and it's just like a drag. However you are reacting, if you've got anger or anxiety or whatever, like that's your actual spiritual condition and your actual theology is lived out. And I began to view business as actually, frankly, candidly, a gymnasium of my own faith where I have to work out and walk out my salvation. Like it's made me actually have to confront, I claim good doctrine, but I don't live good doctrine. Uh-oh. How do I reconcile those things? But then the reality is most of the world goes to work. Most of the world does not go to a church on Sunday. And it's like our average businesses where people begin to live out their faith in an integrated manner, we see 4 to 6 times the rate of people coming to Christ in those workplaces as the local churches in those cities. And that's not to criticize the local church. It's actually an extension of the church. It's just the fact that they're actually intersecting society and culture, and they get 40, 50 hours a week to do that versus 1 hour. And so it's the big idea we try to challenge, whether you're an early stage person or, you know, in our ministry, we work with CEOs and business owners, is this integrated idea that God actually cares about what you're doing on Tuesday. And even if it's not the job you want, and even if it seems like a mundane thing, we got a company in Austin, Texas, that they literally dig ditches, like that. They're a ditch digging company. And go, does God care about that? Well, the first person in the Bible that it ever says God put his spirit upon was a craftsman in the building of the tabernacle. So it seemed like God cared about artisans and carpenters and all those things. So it's just such a huge deal. Like, I feel like I had phenomenal pastor mentors in my life. Like, I'm such a beneficiary of great discipleship. And yet, and no one ever told me, separate your faith and work, don't care about these two things. But they never showed me how to bring them together. And even in a Christian college I went to, we prayed in class. We talked about giving to missions. I was never envisioned to believe that God would care about my business and that my business could be a ministry platform. I missed that. And I think there's millions of Christians all over the world. And our fastest growing environment, to your point, Bishop, is not in the U.S. And frankly, I find Christians outside the U.S. are more rapid to apply truth and live truth boldly. Frankly, Americans are the slowest group to get engaged. That's its own topic. Yeah,
and we have no option but to work out our faith in the midst of all of the challenges that we live. And and while we bless God for what is called the modern missionary movement and all it has done, we also know there's a time and place for every movement, and what is called the model of the I'm public about this, the model of the modern missionary movement is over. There is something new brooding happening all around the world. Mm-hmm. And the sooner we teach our young people, our church members, we get out of that framework. So I never think of him less as a gospel witness because he's in business or politics or whatever. Or the farmer in my churches, many of our so-called frontline workers are bivocational. And that's perfect.
That's right.
That's perfectly okay because it's in the vocation that they're able to make contacts. If we pull them out, then their connection in society is broken. So, yes. So I congratulate you for what you're doing.
So, Mike, your organization is an international organization, and you just made an observation about what you see with the West, versus the rest, of the world. When you look at the scope of C12, is there like an example, a story, and you don't have to use specific names or organizations, but people who've done this right, who've done it well, and then had an impact in the world because of it?
Absolutely. So many. I was just in Asia a couple weeks ago, and I was in Malaysia, where a member was wrestling with this idea, again, this idea of if God's word is true, how do you apply it every moment of every day? And he was in an environment where corruption is just the norm, bribery and manipulation. And he began to really, he was compromising, but he'd be like, this is just normal, God. Like, this is just what you have to do in my culture. And he went, what would it look like if I was to transform the way we do business? And so he literally began printing all of his business cards and his process for hundreds of employees across Malaysia. We don't do bribes anymore. And his sales seems like, then we go out of business. He's like, no, we're going to give the best price, best product, best quality. They already had an established leadership position in this area of construction. And they said, but we're going to no longer bribe. We're going to say either hire us because we are the best provider, best service, or don't hire us. And it was so provocative. It caused a bunch of noise because it actually revealed how much corruption was happening in that space. Because when they began to quote public bids for big construction projects of the walls and retaining walls and highways, and their price was so much different. When people say, how is your price different when your quality is so good? It's like, because we're not paying the middle person anymore. It highlighted how much middle person there was. Well, that literally brought reform to that whole section of construction in that country. And it allowed a improvement of public works. It allowed a reduction of abuse. It allowed him to pay people better. It actually was this like compounding domino chain when he began to say, I'm going to apply this truth there. Or I was in Taiwan and a CEO there was complaining about the state of the country and generational issues and economic disparity. And he began to realize, well, in my own company, there was a high propensity for the executives to make way, way, way more than anybody else and to be kind of oppressive to the lower class in their businesses. And someone asked him, would that honor Jesus? So he actually went back and he ended up allocating 15% of profits to create a profit sharing pool for employees. He gave 30% raises to non-management employees and said, we're going to have a high bar of accountability, high performance. And I'm going to be the most generous and incentivizing to my people. And when people said, why? Mostly employing Buddhists and Muslims and atheists, candidly, he went, it's this wrestling I have with Jesus and the gospel and these biblical truths. And people began to go, tell me more about this faith that would actually cause you to like do business differently. And he was like, I wasn't prepared to like explain the gospel, but I kept being asked to explain my gospel because I was doing business differently. And then he's like, I didn't think about this, but they all want their sisters and brothers and cousins to come work for me now. And they're like, I've got this talent demand. I think when we begin to integrate the two, it creates opportunities to actually make the gospel tangible. It gives it makes people ask you for the reason, the hope you have. And it puts you in this intersection with culture in a really, really powerful way. And so Malaysia, Taiwan, our first forums are launching in Kyiv, Ukraine this week. There's just so many when we begin to do this right.
It reminds me of that passage in the book of 1 Peter where I think Peter writes, live such good lives among those who do not believe that on the day the Chapter Lord visits two. Them, they will remember your good works and glorify their Father. And I totally resonate with what both what you've said, Bishop, and what you've said, Mike. Like, what the average everyday Christian can do where they are is so much more impactful than what we're expecting a handful of pastors or full-time Christian ministers to do. I mean, that's been the story of the church for 2,000 years. It will be the story of the church, hopefully, for the foreseeable future. And it's people like you and your organization that not only inspire people to do it, but show them how to do it. And you've given us a lot of wisdom already here today. Thank you for joining us. Bishop, I love talking to Mike Sciarro. What I said there, it's not something I talk about very, very much, but like when I was a full-time pastor and then I became a business person, I mean, I it's not only that I was judged by people, I felt it myself. Like I started believing it. Have I left ministry? Have I like backslidden? And yet I look at my life and I see I've had more impact in the world as a voluntary pastor, as a voluntary reverend, you know, having my vocation come from another place because I'm like around people that don't believe. And so I just really, really appreciated that conversation. It helped me personally.
And for me, what is very important is even as we construct this and speak on this from the global majority Christian world, we have voices who are also coming at it and saying, hey, this needs to be turned around. We can't disenfranchise 99% of the church or 90% of the church, which is involved in the business of living, not preaching. You know, and I think is an ally for the Babel Undone podcast.
Yeah, I think those percentages are really, really powerful. The vast majority of the church is not in full-time ministry. And so why are we expecting 2% of the church to like touch the entire world? And I once heard a writer speak, and he said, God forbid, if God has called you to be, you know, in full-time ministry, that you stoop so low as to be a business person. And everybody like clapped. And then he said, and God forbid, if he's called you to be a business person, that you stoop so low as to be a pastor. And I don't think you have to choose between the two, but I think the sentiment is right. You are not a lesser Christian if you're not in vocational ministry. All Christians have a ministry wherever God puts them.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.